Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We are today in lesson 213 in the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, where the Apostle Paul is giving instructions to the entirety of the community of the believers, and that is for all of them, in accordance with the law of God, to care for one another, submit to each other, live according to the law, the royal law that God gave Israel to be a royal priesthood. And there cannot be a royal priesthood and an example to the world, you know, when they fight among themselves and squabble and gripe and hurt and afflict and oppress one another, you see. And he gave them a law how to behave themselves before they can become teachers to teach others. And so here it is within the community, unless, you know, they behave in that manner and become like Jesus Christ, who was a law-abiding citizen of the kingdom of heaven, you see, they would not have good relationships, either in their marriages, friendships, you know, parenting, neighbors, things like that. So that's in essence what he's talking about here. And unless you understand that what you are reading here is an expounding of the law of God, of the law that God gave from the beginning of time, from the Garden of Eden, and he expounded that in Sinai, because now there was a nation, a wife, and people who are supposed to be the light of the world. First, by learning to be like God, be holy as I am holy, he told them. And until they learn to do that, they cannot be teaching the world to become holy. And so again here, it's the same thing. God is calling these people out of the world in which they lived in disobedience, in lawlessness, in hatred of one another, in all kind of problems within the marriage, within the family, within the community. And unless they learn to live in accordance with the law of God and abide by the word of God, which is spirit, and so have Christ being formed in them, obviously they will not be able to have a good relationship, good marriage, and they are not going to be fit to be an example to the world. So all these things are have to bear that in mind. What is it that you are reading here through all the epistles of Paul and all the writings of all the other disciples? They are all magnification of the law of God, and not ethereal teachings that supposedly are called the New Testament, and it's a new religion, and it began 2,000 years ago. All those things, all those lies came later on by those who were of the devil, not of God, and claimed to be the people of God, and yet they were deceiving many, even though they were praising and extolling and honoring God, Jesus Christ, and departing, you know, to a degree from their old ways, but still they continued to walk in the same lawlessness, and for that reason God will never recognize them as such, as his own people, his own followers. And so we read in verse 31, "For this reason a man shall leave his father," speaking about the husband and wife, how they ought to treat one another. He said, "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife," glued in Hebrew. That's what the word in Hebrew, as it says about Adam and Eve, glued to his wife, you see. But what happens when he injects sin in between and hurts? Well, you become unglued, you see. They always tell you, the manufacturers, that when he wants to, you know, when you want to use their super glue or whatever, always make sure the surface is very clean. No dust, no dirt, no rust, things like that. In other words, remove all sin from between. Otherwise, if you glue things together and there is dirt in it, sin in it, and transgression in it, and hurts, it's not going to be glued properly, and it'll come unglued. You see, that's the way it works in nature. And so a man who is going to love his wife as his own flesh and blood, you know, he should separate from his father and mother, because, you know, they've got their own mind, their own ways of doing things. And now he's married to another woman, and, you know, she's got her own way of doing things. And if they stay together, there are going to be a lot of clashes there. So that was an instruction from God. Now you begin your own nest, you know, you depart from your father and mother. It doesn't mean, you know, totally far away from them and start, you know, and dishonor them or don't care for them anymore. But you begin your own cell, your own family, and therefore you got to do it separately there, in accordance with the teachings that you have received, you know, from your fathers and mothers on both sides, and show honor and respect to each other and things like that. But that was a law from God. Don't stick together, because otherwise you're going to have all the stories of the mothers-in-laws. And a lot of people have had those kind of problems because some mothers don't know where to stop. You see, they want to control their sons, they want to control the lives of their sons, and you know, the new mother, the new wife, and want to tell them how to do things their own way. Well, those are transgressions that many people commit all the time because they do not know the law of God. And so God made it very plain. Cut off that dependency that you had on, you know, on your mother and father. And now your wife is going to fulfill those kind of things, and you're going to fulfill for her what her father and mother were, did before that, and still maintain good relationship with both sides. If everybody understands that, there aren't going to be any sin and iniquity in between, and everybody's going to love everybody. And so he says, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. What do you mean, one flesh? You see, when Christ says, I and the Father are one, what is he talking about? Is he inside each other? You see, just like the pagan doctrine of the Trinity, God three in one. So Christ comes down here, lives his life here, then he goes back there and goes straight into the stomach of the Father or the heart of the body or whatever, and they're three in one hanging around there inside each other. You see, that's insanity. And they convince themselves of that insanity, and they believe it with great conviction, and they think everybody else who doesn't believe it is not a Christian. People who reject the law of God to begin with and have the audacity to think that they are the followers of Christ. And they said the criteria, what is it that makes you a follower of Christ or not? Well, here it is, Adam and Eve becoming one flesh. Well, they're supposed to live life together and share hopes and dreams, same faith, the same way, so to speak, one law, one doctrine, one faith, one body, one church, one Lord, one God, all going the same direction, you see, integrating into each other, emotionally, psychologically, in every way. Now, that's how God and Jesus Christ are one, and that's how he commanded us to be one with him. And that's how he said it's going to be when he and the Father will come and make their abode in us, dwell in us, and we all become, so to speak, one flesh. You see? That's a metaphor for total unity of the minds and the hearts and the spirits. And yet people in their ignorance don't understand that. They're given to confusion and to the mind of the devil that deceives them, and so they come up with all kind of false doctrines. So God made it very plain here. That's how two people become one flesh. They're still two separate identities, but they're one flesh in a metaphoric sense. In other words, now that you are one flesh, you're not going to hang around with another flesh, because that'll be breaking the marriage, the relationship. You have adultery, fornication there, all kind of things like that. But all the totality of your flesh shall desire only that which is yours, not somebody else. So it has many, many ramifications here. And so he says, this is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. So on one hand, it's a mystery. Well, for mystery, anything is a mystery that when you don't know it. But when you know it, it's not a mystery. So he says, on one hand, it's a mystery. Well, it's a mystery to the world. That's what he means. They don't know it. They don't understand. What is it that God is doing upon this earth? And especially through Israel. You see, he's taken Israel to be a wife, which is a metaphor, because obviously it's not a real husband-wife relationship, but on a spiritual level, a wife to whom he's going to give his instructions, in whom he's going to dwell, who is going to be just like him, having the same hopes and dreams, same aspirations, the same ways of thinking and emotions and feelings and all that, not an enemy, not totally different, not going her own way, and then through this relationship to bring children. That means all the nations of the earth. That was a plan from the beginning of time. And God has not begun to do it. Maybe he would have done it earlier if Adam and Eve obeyed his laws and stayed that way and told their children, but he began with Abraham and then Isaac and then Jacob, and they were not the wives, they were just the beginners of that process. And then through Jacob, he in essence began the process when he had his 12 children, and he made sure that every one of them has a name that he inspired, because they are going to be all those names, the 12 names of them, they're going to be on the city of Jerusalem, not only the physical one, but the heavenly Jerusalem. And all of them, he brought the 12 tribes, the nation, and then he came and married them in Mount Sinai, and he made them a royal priesthood to be a light to the world, so they can in turn, once they internalize his law, become like him, they can go and teach the whole world, and that's how the whole earth was going to be salvaged from darkness, from confusion, from being sons of the devil and resembling him in their behavior and conduct, to becoming his own, because to that end he created them to be in his image and in his likeness. That's the mystery he's talking about. Well, it wasn't a mystery to those who understood the process, who knew, who comprehended that. That was a mystery to the world. And he said, I speak concerning Christ and the church. And who, you know, the church that he's talking about was Israel, is Israel, will always be Israel, and the few grafted into her of the nations, and then all the nations of the earth will become the children. There will never be a part of the church, a part of the wife, but there will be a part of the family, the children that will come out of this marriage between the wife, the church, and Jesus Christ. And God determined that the church will be Israel. You see, no other entity. He's not going to change. He's not going to drop Israel and pick up somebody else. You know, the church at large, made of all the nations of the earth. You see, that was a lie that began to be told later on. And the false church was the one that constantly taught those lies, and to this very day, and they believe it. A lot of people believe it until they come before Christ and he says to them, I never knew you. And then they look around and they see that he brings back Israel back to their land and he marries them in accordance with the, with what he said long ago through the prophets. And no one else but Israel and the few grafted among them. The few of the nations, you know, past, present, and some still in the future until his coming. That's what he's talking about here. So people in their ignorance from the pagan church, they read it and think, oh, that's speaking about us. No, it's not speaking about other entities. It's speaking only about one single entity, Israel, the Israel of God, the wife of God that was, is, and will be to her. To that end, he came and gave his life in order to wash her, Israel, purge her, cleanse her, purify her from all her sins and iniquity. And all the prophets spoke about that. And then he's going to bring them back to himself and marry them, and she will be his wife and he will be her husband, as you read in Hosea and other places. That's what he's talking about. This is what Paul, a Jew, he's not a Catholic, he's not a Protestant, he's not in a part of that whore or harlots. He's a Jew, he knows the scriptures, he knows the law, he knows the prophets. So when he's saying that, this is what he's talking about. Unless you know the mind of the speaker, of the writer, you don't know what he's saying here. And some people just gave it their own interpretation and they applied it to themselves, appropriating everything to themselves. And yet Christ is going to tell them, I never knew you. You can appropriate me all you want. I don't know you. You see, that's a reality, unfortunately. And so he says, nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Because that's a problem. The problem for the wife, for the husband to love his wife because of all kind of negatives that are there within the relationship. And it's difficult because of that for the wife to have respect for her husband. And so what you see in the world today is just the opposite. Women do not respect their husbands, put them down, make fun of them, claim to be the superior of both, you see, of the two. And the husband, on the other hand, you know, puts down the wife, he makes fun of her, uses her as an object and abuses her. What do they get from that? And they perpetuate that through their children from generation to generation, doing the will of the devil instead of that of God. Well, these are the teachings of the law. You love your neighbor as yourself. You see, that's the royal law. And that's the entirety of the law. As Christ would say, on this hangs the entirety of the law and the prophets. All those teachings that he gave them. And then he goes to the children now, the product of this marriage. Chapter 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. It's not wrong, but it's right. But if children are raised in a family where husband and wife are always putting down each other and, you know, using sarcasm and acid comments and making fun of each other, how are they going to obey their parents in the Lord? How are they going to have respect for them? You see? So everybody has to be mindful of their own conduct and behavior. We may not be aware of it, but the children pick on everything. They notice the attitudes of both father and mother, and based on that they behave. So it's important for all to remember that and to be extremely mindful of our conduct and behavior and to foster this attitude and this atmosphere in the family of respect, of mutual respect, of honor, of kindness, of mercy, showing how to deal with matters, you know, when things go wrong, not to put down others, not to speak evil of them, you see, not to insult people, but to solve it in a peaceful manner, in a loving manner, in a kind, you know, and respectful manner. And the children learn from that and they become that way. And then it's easy for them to obey their parents. You see, all those laws work together, and you break one of them and you've got a chain reaction. So it's important to always remember that the law of God stands as a whole, not just partly that you obey some of them and forget about the others. You know, you try to have a chain like that, you know, where you take care of certain pieces of the chain, then forget about the others. What are you going to end up with? And so he says to the children, now honor your father and mother. Now if the children see their own fathers and mothers dishonor their own fathers and mothers, how are they going to treat their own fathers and mothers? You see? So they have to see their own parents treat their own grandparents in a very honorable manner, and so they learn to do likewise. And there are many societies who have that. They pass on that honor and respect to the elders from generation to generation, and the peer pressure is all around there. If you've got some personal problems within your own family, you still see it around. Everybody's honoring their father and mother and grandparents and great-grandparents, you see. They hold them in high esteem, you know, in Eastern societies, Middle Eastern societies, many places like that. And so all those things have to be brought into mind when we go through this kind of laws, to understand them, to emulate them, to internalize them, and to spread them around. And so it says, you honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. In other words, God told them, you honor your father and mother, and if you do, your life will be prolonged in the land. And if you don't, you're going to have a lot of chain reactions there that will cut short your life. Because if you don't honor them, you don't follow, you know, their path in their way, assuming it is right, well, you begin to fight among yourselves, and pretty soon you get older and you take weapons and you kill each other, and obviously you're not going to live long on the earth and mistreat one another and things like that. But notice again, you know, he's constantly appealing to the law of God, the law that was given in Sinai. Honor your father and mother, you know, here it is, the 10 oracles. And many other laws, obviously, all of them. He says, this is the first commandment with promise that it may be well with you. First, while you're alive, and that you may live long on the earth. Two promises there. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children. So it goes both ways. Both ways, excuse me. You know, fathers and children, they must treat each other nice. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. In other words, don't, you know, whenever you spank them or you put them or you correct them, don't do it just, you know, to please your own self. Because, you know, they step on your toes or things like that, or they get on your nerves, you know. So we punish our children because they got on our nerves. You know, we don't sit down to realize and think and comprehend and understand and investigate what is it that is happening here. We just lash back. We're trying to concentrate on watching TV, and they try to get our attention to ask for something, and we just explode. You see, that's not of God. That's how we provoke them to wrath. What kind of an atmosphere do we grow them in? An atmosphere of war, not peace, not love, not affection. So the law of God prohibits us from behaving in that manner. He said, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training, that is education, and admonition of the Lord. And God doesn't treat us like that, you see. So we must treat them in like manner and teach them by our conduct and behavior what God is. Because a lot of people have bad relationship with their fathers or mothers, and to them, from a very young age, that's the way God is. You see? That becomes a reflection. And therefore, it is extremely important for us to realize that we reflect God to our children. And we have to be extremely careful how we treat them. Because that's how they develop their attitude and their feelings toward their Creator. And many people have a very hard time, especially a lot of women, have a very hard time with God, God the Father especially, because they remember how their father treated them. And that's a horrible sin that we commit, and we should be extremely careful about it. And obviously we're not perfect, we make mistakes, but you know, we can always repent and apologize to them and try to correct things whenever we can. And they're going to understand, we're all human, we make mistakes. And so he says here, and you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. You see, not of the devil and his ways. You know, you're angry, you lash at people, you speak evil, you insult them, you dummy, you're no good, you know, things like that. As a lot of parents do it, a lot of mothers do an awful lot of that. You see them often abuse their children all the time, verbally, often time. And when you think about it, since they're spending much more time with the children, more than the fathers, Women are the greatest abusers on the face of the earth. That's why boys grow up to be the way they are, hating women oftentimes, or despising women, or putting down women. They have not been taught properly by their own mothers, or let alone have the audacity of putting down men and complaining about men or their husbands. And they forget who produced them. And so it's important for both father and mother to remember that by their own actions, you see, they determine what kind of people are on earth and how they feel toward God. And God is very furious when he sees us abuse our power and authority that he gave us over our children, where we are to them like God. You see? And God holds us responsible for it. And therefore, you know, we have to be extremely careful about our, you know, just watch our behavior all the time. And, you know, look at the mirror of the law and see how we behave, both men and women. Not abuse one another, you know. Little children that God gave us, they are little children, yes. We have to care for them and love them and all that. But they're not ours. They are a gift from God. And God wants us to treat his gifts respectfully, with honor, with love, with patience, with long-suffering. Obviously, we're human beings. We make mistakes. There are all kind of stresses and circumstances all around. But if we walk in the law of God day and night, we begin to understand. We cannot treat our children as just a mere object, but we have to treat them just like the Father treats us, because as we treat them, so we will be treated by our God. It's as simple as that, so we can learn, not because he hates us. You see, he's going to give us a taste of our own medicine. And oftentimes, that's the reality. When you mistreat your children, they grow up, they couldn't care less about you at that point. Hardly ever call you, hardly ever visit you. Why? Because of what we did to them as they were growing up, when they could do nothing about it. But when they can, they'll let you know how they felt about it. You see, and a lot of parents lose their children because of that, and it never dawns on them why. You know, what wrong did I do, they say, when they do all kind of things they have no business doing. You haven't been looking in the mirror of the law, that's what you were doing. And all of us are guilty of that to one degree or the other, so we must watch ourselves. We are gods to them. And we should reflect our Creator and our God, our Father, to them in our conduct and behavior. And if we don't, if we disobey these laws, well, it's not going to be well with us, and life is not going to be prolonged. And if it is, it's going to be hell on earth for many. And so that's what he's saying here. Do it with the right attitude. Admonition of the Lord, not your own. And then he goes to another category of people at the time. Today you call them just, you know, your employees, because we don't have bond servants in the same sense as we did in the past, in the societies of old, even though some people still have it. Other people treat their, you know, their workers as bond servants. Verse 5, bond servants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh. That's applicable to us when we have bosses. How do we treat them? You see? And, of course, you know, how do they treat us? But, you know, we cannot help, you know, how they treat us, but we have to stand before God and we have to do his will regardless of what our bosses do to us. You see? Because our obedience is to God himself directly. And so when we show honor and respect toward our bosses, even though when they don't deserve it, we show God respect and honor, you see. And then when he desires, when he wills, when it's right, when it's good, he's going to sway their heart to be kind to us and merciful and compassionate. He can do all those kind of things and give us peace in their presence. And so, you know, we have to learn from that. So he says, bond servants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh with fear and trembling. Now, it doesn't mean that you are shaking all the time there. Well, what it means is respectful, be mindful, be honorable, you see, care for their needs. Remember that, you know, they're being bosses, you know, trying very hard also to keep the business going. They have a lot of stresses, you know, and they lose their temper now and there and things like that. Anyway, they've got their own human nature. But, you know, when we do our best, then they are confident, they are peaceful, things are going well, God blesses the operation, everything, you know, is happy. So all those things have a reason. That's the reason why God inspired David to record a lot of those psalms in which he was describing what happens to a man that meditates on the law of God day and night. His peace, His harmony, His a lot of blessings from God. And that's why David would say, "Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day long," because he sits down and thinks about all these matters from every conceivable point, and then he lives this kind of life. And God blesses him abundantly, and he wants all of us to do likewise. So we must do it. Meditate on the Word of God day and night, you know, sort of speak, you know, eat the flesh of Christ, as it would say, and drink His blood. Chew on it all the time until we become it. Until we become the truth and the way and the path and the light. Then we do it by nature. Then we can be defined by nature as being good and righteous and holy and sinful and things like that. And so he said, this is how you behave with them, with fear and trembling. And obviously you should treat government also with respect and honor, as God commanded us. All that has arisen, in spite of them, regardless of what they are, but in order that we may develop the nature of God. That's the reason for it. That's the purpose of it. So it's for our own benefit to submit, even though it may be painful, even though what they do, you know, and here and there may be wrong. That's their problem before God. We have to care about our own problem. Developing a nature of submission, of love and of affection, of mercy, of respect, of honor, of loving our enemies. And obviously they are enemies, they're not pleasant people. But God commands us to love them anyway, as He loves us while we were yet enemies, as He cares about the entirety of the whole earth. While they are yet enemies, you see? In that way we become children of our Father instead of children of the devil. You know, they hurt us, we hurt them back. They disrespect us, we disrespect them. That's of the devil, that's not of God. And so that's the reason for all these instructions. These are the instructions of the law. And so it says, you do it in sincerity of heart, you see, not put on, as to Christ. That's the point. You're not doing it for them personally, but ultimately, mostly, foremost, to God Himself. So He can see what kind of a person you are under all circumstances. And then in the process, you know, those guys are going to see your behavior and they're going to think, well, this is a nice guy. And their heart is going to be softened toward you and mellowed, and they're going to treat you nice. And if they don't do it that time, when the time comes and their eyes are open, they're going to remember. And you will be their witness. Then they will come back and love you. They will come become your brothers, you see, if not now, in the future. So, in other words, whatever we do, think about it from God's point of view, not at the moment. And so he says, you'll be doing it, you know, in sincerity, not with eye service, verse 6, as man-pleasers, you know, the vernacular, as they call it today, brown-nosers. We're not supposed to be this kind of people, man-pleasers. Oh, no, but do it in sincerity, not with eye service, just, you know, for show, really, from the heart, where they can really see it and see the results of it, being genuine. In that, we tell them who God is by our own conduct and behavior. When we claim to be servants of God instead of blasphemers of God, while we claim to be servants of God, we behave just like they are. You see, or like children of the devil, and we bring reproach on our Father, on our God, on our Creator. You see? And so that's the reason for all these laws. Be genuine. But as bond servants of Christ, doing the will of God, that's the will of God, the will of the Father, from the heart. We have to learn to be that way. And it's not important what kind of people they are. That's their problem. If we remember that, it doesn't matter how they treat us. That's their problem. It matters is, are we behaving like God? Do we become like Him? Do we reflect His nature? Even though at the moment there is no gratitude, there is no thanks, instead of that, insults and things like that put down. But if in spite of that, we're capable of going just the other way, God's way, you see, against the stream, and we develop the nature of God while we go through these afflictions, as we go through the valley of the shadow of death, Christ is with us to give us boldness and strength and encouragement to remember there is a reward, there is a future. You see, we become like God. So it's a momentary thing that you find there, you know, as you overcome this kind of temptations to lash back, you become more like God. You overcome temptation and a crown of glory is awaiting you. You see, we have to sit down and meditate on these things all the time until we do it by nature. So when those kind of things come and provocations, we don't, you know, respond in like manner, but we do it as in accordance with the will of God from the heart. That's not easy. That's the reason why only very few walk in the narrow path and find the straight way. You see, well, the majority would rather go in the broad way. And so he says in verse 7, you do it with goodwill, doing service. You see, not ill will, doing will. Okay, now you told me that, I have no choice, grudgingly. No, with goodwill. Because when you remember that God is the one, Jesus Christ is the one you are doing it for, and it is for your own self to become like them, then it becomes a totally different story. But when we don't remember that, that's where the problem is. Then we become carnal, sold under sin, as Paul would say. The law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. When we forget what it is all about that we are here for. And so he says, you do it with goodwill, doing service as to the Lord. And he constantly repeats that, as to the Lord and not to men. And it is for husbands, and it is for wives, and it is for children, and it is for employees. It is for everybody, as unto the Lord, so he can be the hope of glory in us, so he can be formed in us. And he cannot do it unless we are obedient to his law. These are laws, these are instructions, and they were given from the Garden of Eden. They were given in Sinai to a whole nation. You see, they were spoken and magnified by Jesus Christ when he came in the flesh. They are being taught by his disciples. And that's the only thing they've ever done. Teach the law of God. That's what the epistles are all about. That's what the so-called New Testament is all about. To teach the law of God, to magnify the law of God. There is nothing else. Is there anything beside God? You see, beside his nature and character? Obviously not. And yet people in their ignorance, they think, oh, well, now stop talking about the law of God. Let's talk about something else. You know, don't you have anything else to talk about? No, I don't. And if you're a sane person spiritually, you don't either. But if you're blind, naked, and poor, miserable, and wretched, as Christ would say and did say about his people, well, obviously, then you begin to think differently about it. Well, that was the major preoccupation of King David. Day and night he meditated on the law of God because he wanted so much to be like his father, like his maker, like his creator. You see? So that's your whole life. You have to be consumed with that. And that's exactly what Christ said. Unless you hunger and thirst for righteousness, that's what the law of God is all about, you will not be filled. You're going to be naked and empty. You will never be me. You see? And that's what Paul is teaching here. And all the others have done likewise. So you do it, goodwill service, as unto the Lord, not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is slave or free. It doesn't make any difference in what condition you are, in what miserable marriage you are. If you do it as unto God, instead of for selfish reasons, which are, you know, will cause you to be even more miserable than you are, you see, well, obviously, that's the way things are going to be. But if you do it as unto the Lord, it doesn't make any difference, you know, what the husband is doing, what the wife is doing, what the boys and girls, you know, are doing, you know, in the house, and neighbors, and parents, and in-laws, and all that. You do it as unto the Lord. As unto the Lord, your eyes are upon him, not on those things which are around you. You see, then you do it with goodwill, in spite of them, and when the time comes, they're going to find out what they were and what you were, you know, what you were. And they're going to turn around and then give God glory. And so he says that's the way it's going to work. And you, now it goes to another category, the masters, the bosses, the leaders in the congregation, you know, in business, in government, everywhere. And you masters do the same things to them, giving up, threatening. That's the first thing they do. Why? They've got power. They can hurt you. He says, don't do that. That's contrary to the law. Don't ever threaten people. You see? That's demonic. That's of the devil. You see? Because what's the reason for threatening? To punish, to hurt. They don't do it because, you know, they want to do it for your own good, as God would, you see. He warns us if we're going to misbehave, he's going to punish us. Those are not just idle threats. That's for our own good, because he loves us. That's not the reason why people threaten others. You know, you get on their nerves, they've got the power, they're, you know, going to threaten you. You know, if you don't behave yourself, I'm going to smack you. Isn't that the line, you know, that you hear from a very young age, from your father or your mother? What's the purpose of threatening? You see, that's not godly. So we must learn to do that. If we're the masters, we have children, we should not be threatening them. We should tell them, look, what you're doing is wrong and I'm going to have to punish you. It's not a threat for your own good, you see. But he's talking about the kind of threats, obviously, that is not of the same nature. And so he said, giving up threatening, knowing that your own master also is in heaven and there is no partiality with him. As you treat your people, so he's going to treat you. So don't play games. And he's watching. That's what he's saying to them. So always remember who you are and who God is, and it should reflect him, not the devil. That's what he says to every single one of us, and that's what the law of God is all about, to become like God, not like the devil, who is lawless, and iniquity was found in him from the beginning. That is transgression against the law of God. Finally, my brethren, verse 10, he said, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might, not your own strength, but in the strength of the Lord. Now, that's different. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. A lot of people like to talk about that. Sounds nice and good. What does that mean? If you don't know the law of God, if you do not walk in the laws of God that apply to every aspect of your life, you don't know what the armor of God is all about. It just becomes, you know, an ethereal thing to many. You put on the whole armor of God, he said, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And how the devil is going to come at you? From all directions, in order to lead you astray, in order to lead you into sin and transgression. So when you remember, when you meditate day and night on the law of God, you know in every case how to deal with the matter. And that's exactly what Jesus Christ had done when he was confronted with the devil in all that temptation. You read in Matthew 4, that everything that the devil was trying to get him to do, to dishonor his father, to become lawless, to do the devil's work, he always came back at him with the sword, with the word of God. Yes, but God says don't tempt. God says don't do this. You see what I mean? That's what he's talking about here. And without the law of God, you see, if Jesus Christ did not have the law of God in his mouth, in his heart, how would he have fought the devil? That's the only weapon you have. The word of God. The righteousness of God. You see, people try to tempt you to steal. He says no. The law says don't steal. You know, they try to teach you to fornicate and mess around, things like that. And I said, no, the law of God says don't do that because that's not good for me. And that dishonors my father. And the law of God is your protection. And when you do not know the entirety of the law of God, and Satan knows that, he's going to come at you in those areas where you are not aware of the law of God or you have weakness in that area because you are not really given to it. You see? And that's the way it works. So he said, put on the whole armor of God. That is, put the entirety of the law of God in your mind and heart so you can always know how to fight back in this area, in that area, in the other area. And without the law of God, there is no way you can do it. So he says, you do it so that you can stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, speaking about demonic powers and authorities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness. Of this age, what is darkness? You know, it's all lawlessness. Rebellion against the law of God. Against spiritual hosts of wickedness. Against, well, you know, again, you know, only the law of God can tell you what is wicked, what is not. So we fight against hosts of wickedness, armies of wickedness in heavenly places. And therefore, he says, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Again, unless preachers who stand behind the pulpit do not teach the law of God to their members, how would they know how to withstand the devil? How would they be able to put the whole armor of God if they do not teach them the entirety of the law of God? Because Satan knows it very well, and he knows where to hit you. In the areas where you don't care much about the law of God or you don't know anything about it. You see, the weak point, so to speak. That's how armies fight each other. They look for the weak point where people are not on guard, where they don't, you know, consider certain things, where they haven't thought about certain things, how to protect themselves here and there. That's where they come at you and they enter in and they kill you from within. They destroy you from within. Well, the law of God is our protection in every conceivable area. In every aspect. And when people despise the law of God or aspects of the law of God or parts of the law of God, that's what Satan is going to do. He's going to come through those open windows and doors that he have there. You see? And that's what he's saying here. You take the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand in the evil day and having done all to stand. Stand therefore having girded your waist with the truth. What is the truth? If you don't study the law of God, how would you know what is the truth? What is true, what is not true? You see? The people of Israel were told by high priest that you should have known better when he created the golden calf. This is your Elohim, O Israel, that brought you out of Egypt. Was that true? No, that was not. And so they worshipped it. And so the false prophets have been doing ever since. Deceiving people with false doctrines. That's not the truth. But how would you know unless you study the Word of God day and night? Know what God said, what God didn't say. You see, know how God feels about this matter or how God doesn't feel about that matter. And so forth. Now that's what he's talking about here. Having put on the breastplate of righteousness again. How would you know what is righteousness unless you study the law of God? That tells you what is right, what is wrong. So that's all he's talking about here, the law, the Torah. That's all he's talking about here. That's all the Apostle Paul has to talk about. And when he talks about Christ, when he talks about the cross, he's talking about the law of God. Because Christ is the way. He's the epitome of it. And if he died on the cross, it's because of transgression against that way and that law. So he's talking about both. The unrighteousness that produced the cross, the transgression of man, and the one who nailed the sins of humanity, becoming sin himself to the cross, so that he now can begin to live his life in those who are obviously willing to allow him to live his life in them through righteousness, holiness, not disobedience to the law of God. And so all those people that hang around, you know, with the cross around their neck, you see, they're blasphemers of God. They're claiming to be followers of Christ when they despise his law. When they speak evil of it, when they, you know, they are contentious to it, toward it, and they despise the nature of God, and yet they pretend to be holy Jews hanging around with the cross. It makes them holy and saintly and makes them feel good. I'm a Christian, bearing false witness, liars. And they don't recognize that. Because they are so blind, they are not capable of seeing anything. Because their preachers haven't taught them the law of God. And you cannot bear false witness. You see, that's an unrighteous thing to do. You don't see any of the servants of God, you know, hanging around, you know, Paul and the others hanging around with a cross around their neck. Or talking about it, or teaching people to do that. Or putting it, you know, on top of a building, calling it a church. We go over there and teach vomit and lies and deceptions and, you know, teach people to despise the law of God. And they call it a house, you know, worship, house of prayer to God. And so forth. You see? That's the reason why God said, well, Jesus Christ is going to tell them, I never knew you. You're all phonies. My righteousness and law was never in you. And that's what Paul is talking about here. And having shod your feet with the preparation of the tidings of peace, later on called gospel, but it's tidings. That's what it means. Doesn't mean gospel. Gospel means, you know, the God's breath, you know, the word of God. You see, it does not reflect, you know, what the word it really is. Tidings, good news of peace. In other words, if you walk in righteous path, you're going to have peace. And you're going to end up in the kingdom that is going to be a kingdom of peace, not of war and bloodshed. It's not an ethereal subject here. And it said, above all, taking the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked ones. There are certain things about God you don't know, about his plan you don't know, about certain laws that he gave and you don't know why he gave them. You obey them anyway because God said them and you have faith that what God said is right. So it doesn't make any difference what anybody says. You're going to do it. You see? And so the devil cannot come at you from any point. Well, how about this and how about that? Well, if God is a God of love, well, how come he allowed you, you know, to suffer like that? Well, you have faith. You know God that whatever he does is right. He's holy. He's righteous. He's a God of law and order, not chaos and confusion. Every law is good, even though I may be hurt at the moment. By it. That's like major law of the Sabbath. You keep the Sabbath. And people say, well, you know, if you're not willing to work on the Sabbath, I'm sorry, you have no job. And he said, well, I know that this is a law of God. It's a law that is good. And God is going to help me one way or the other. And you're not going to destroy my faith and make me work on the Sabbath, you know, and hurt my conscience and offend my, you know, my God and things like that. And well, where am I going to end up? And so Satan can never get to you when you are totally obedient to the law of God, no matter what. And because Christ was totally obedient to the law of God, no matter what they did to him, you know, afflicted him, pulled his beard, smited, you know, smote him and spit at him and scourged him, and then finally, you know, they crucified him, nothing changed. He continued to be obedient to the law of God until the end. And he never sinned, never committed iniquity. You see? So no matter how many fiery darts the devil was throwing at him from all directions, using human beings who didn't know their right from their left, he was able to, in taking that shield of faith, to withstand and overcome. And so he taught us to do likewise. That's the cross we must take. Obedience to the law of God unconditionally, no matter what. And if you are not doing it, and yet you hang around with the cross, you are a liar. And that's in essence what they are, and that's what God is going to tell them when the time comes. You see? And that's very unfortunate. Because people are not aware of that. You know, they just think that, you know, that they're nice people and they do good things and God is pleased with it. Anyway, until next time, this is again Mordecai Joseph.